Good morning. My name is Eliza, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the first quarter earnings conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, please press star one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Ms. Beth Cooper. You may begin your conference.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to Chesapeake Utilities' first quarter 2017 earnings conference call. We're thankful today to be hosting the call live from Wesley College in Dover, Delaware. We have several of our officers as well as our employees that graduated from this college in attendance, and we typically recruit from this college and have new employees joining the organization all the time. We're especially thankful to Dr. Gibson, Provost and Vice President of Academic Affairs, for enabling us to conduct today's call here at Wesley College, as well as members of the faculty and students that are in attendance. So good morning, everybody. Turning to slide two, you all are accustomed to our normal disclosure regarding forward-looking statements. We actually refer you to our Form 10-Q, where we describe the reasons for why the forward-looking information may actually differ from our actual results. I'm now going to turn the call over to Mike McMaster, our President and CEO, and he's going to make some introductory opening remarks.
Thanks, Beth. I guess first, I'm going to talk just very briefly about the first quarter. Margin growth in the first quarter was coming from both regulated and unregulated operations of $6.8 million, a very strong performance in that regard. Additional margin of $2.3 million came from Eight Flags, our combined heat and power plant down in Florida. $2.2 million came from Peninsula Energy Services Company, our natural gas marketing operations. $1.6 million came from our natural gas transmission and distribution customer growth. Our Florida Reliability Infrastructure Program also generated $680,000. So overall, again, a very strong quarter in margin. We also had higher operating expenses, depreciation and taxes due to growth primarily, cost increases in our regulated and unregulated operations, multiple system expansions and growth in our unregulated energy business, Eight Flags, Aspire, and PESCO, due diligence costs associated with an investment that we were reviewing that we decided to not pursue, higher depreciation and taxes associated with capital spending for Florida GRIP, Eastern Shore, Aspire, and Eight Flags. We have several other factors that are impacting our earnings growth this year. The third warmest weather on Delmarva Peninsula during the last 50 years negatively impacted us by $0.12 when compared to normal weather. The shutdown of Xeron, our wholesale marketing company in Houston, cost $0.02. Common stock issuance in September of 2016 to finance recent capital expenditures cost $0.07, and then higher interest and increased debt from other and other expenses cost $0.02. Overall, again, it's a very strong quarter. We're committed to long-term sustainable growth, and you're seeing that in terms of the margin growth, and we'll talk about some of the operating costs here in a moment. Thanks. I'll turn it back to Beth.
Turning to slide four, what you'll see, the factors that Mike described resulted in our earnings per share being down for the quarter by $0.16 per share. Recall that Mike talked about we had strong gross margin growth of $6.8 million. We had operating expenses that increased by $8.5 million for many of the reasons that Mike talked about. So overall, EPS for the quarter was $1.17 compared to $1.33 last year. On slide, turning to slide five, what we've tried to do is lay out some of those, the impact of some of those non-recurring unusual items. And so when you begin looking at 2017, the first thing you add back is the variance in terms of the weather quarter-over-quarter, and that represented $0.04 per share. Xeron, as Mike talked about, was wound down the quarter. We made a decision that we were going to exit that business. As a result of making that decision, we recorded expenses that translated into $0.02 per share. So on an adjusted EPS basis, we are basically sitting at $1.23, pretty much the same as last year when you look at it also on an adjusted basis. The factors that we adjusted for in 2016 on this slide include, first, have been providing the OPT 90 service last year on an interim basis before the physical facilities had actually been constructed. So factoring that in, the construction of those facilities are now in place in 2017, but putting the two on an apples-to-apples comparison, we would deduct that 8 cents per share. And then also this year, we continue to have further decline in our retail propane margins per gallon that represented 2 cents. So last year was 2 cents higher, but we did start to see last year, if you recall, the beginning of the decline in those margins. So once again, flat year over year, quarter over quarter on a year-to-date basis. The other two things to point out is that there's nothing that's showing on this slide related to the revenue requirement for the system reliability project that we're in the process of completing this month. And then there's nothing at this point that's been factored in as it relates to the Eastern Shore Natural Gas rate case. Digging into the segments and first looking at our regulated energy segment, talk a little bit about the margin growth. So the margin growth wasn't basically 50% in each of the two segments, but it was pretty close. When you take a look at the regulated segment, our gross margin was up by $3.1 million. There were a lot of factors, a lot of things happening within our business. Those included that our natural gas distribution businesses continue to have organic growth that represented right around $800,000. An equal amount was also as a result of the service expansions that we put into place the last couple of years. Above and beyond that, our Florida GRIP program, which has been in place for several years, added $680,000 of additional margin for the quarter. Our Delaware Division rate case that was finalized with new rates that were placed into service in January of this year added an incremental just under $550,000 of margin. And then lastly, we were able to provide natural gas services to Eight Flags plant that contributed additional regulated margin of just under $500,000. So those were the key gross margin increases for the quarter, very significant overall. Once again, we talked about we did have higher operating expenses. So turning to slide 7, you'll see where those expenses were largely incurred. The first being as a result of the growth that we've experienced on the pipeline side, we had increased outside services, maintenance, facilities, those types of costs related to Eastern Shore that represented about $1.2 million, higher staffing costs associated with being able to serve growth that were about $800,000, and then some various other costs. In total, those representing $2.1 million of the $3.5 million that the segment had in terms of increased operating expenses. Now, recall I mentioned on the previous slide two things that are underway that have not been factored in when you think about the quarter. On the distribution side, both in Florida and Delmarva, we also had increased costs to support our growth. And then lastly, about $200,000 just in other operating expenses. On the unregulated side, I mentioned that our margin pretty much was about a little more than $3 million, both in the regulated and unregulated segments. Here you'll see that our gross margin was $3.7 million, with the key drivers being our natural gas marketing operation, PESCO, added about $2.2 million in margin. As a result of one key contract that they had executed, as well as additional customers that have been added, that they're delivering both to the cooperative to serve those customers, as well as to the utility that they deliver natural gas to. In addition, Eight Flags added $1.8 million. Recall Mike talked about in total the plant generated $2.3 million of gross margin, $500 coming from the utility side as we're providing services to the plant, and then the plant is generating that steam that's being sold to an industrial customer that generated $1.8 million. Aspire Energy, our natural gas infrastructure company located in Ohio, added about $500,000. And then the weather and also the pressure on retail margins that I talked about earlier resulted in a decline in gross margin of about $1 million. O&M expenses there increased by $3 million, and we'll turn to the next slide, slide 9. You'll see there were several very large factors that contributed to that increase. First, about $500,000 was related to the shutdown of Xeron. In addition to that, about $800,000 were expenses associated with the operation of Eight Flags. Eight Flags was not in operation last year. This year they are. So the $800,000 corresponding to the $1.8 million of margin that I talked about on the previous page. We also had higher staffing costs to support growth in PESCO and our propane distribution operations as we've continued to expand some of our initiatives there, and then lastly, some outside services facilities costs related to integrity management and other programs that we're implementing in those entities. So overall, a $3 million increase. Earlier this week, our board of directors considered our dividend recommendation and ultimately approved a dividend increase that represented 8 cents per share. That's a 6.6% dividend growth for the company. And the key point about this is that it demonstrates our commitment to ensuring that we have long-term dividend growth that's supported by earnings growth. That's been underlined through our decisions that we've had as a company and the financial discipline that we've executed, and this decision supports that and continues to support that philosophy. As you look at our balance sheet, we've been doing a lot over the last year and continue to do a lot to ensure that we have the capacity to support the growth that Mike's going to talk about that's on the horizon for us. So as you sit and look at us from a pro forma standpoint at the end of April, we completed the equity issuance last year. Mike talked about the dilution and the results of the shares that were issued. The other thing that we did in April of this year was we completed our long-term debt placement for $70 million. So we're sitting with book capitalization just over $800 million. Our equity to total capitalization is about 57%. So we've got the capacity to support the growth that we're undertaking. We've also initiated and have in place some additional debt capacity as needed to support our future growth. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike, who's going to talk about our strategies for growth.
Thanks, Beth. I guess when you look at this slide, you're going to see five different points of focus that we have. First, promoting growth and development of our team. Obviously, our team is critically important to our growth. This includes strategic thinking and creative energy. When you think about a strategic plan, you work on a plan, you set it down, you start initiating that plan, invariably something's going to change. So the creative thinking part is about reacting to that change in a manner that's constructive. And then creative energy just basically speaks to our employees, again, about how they approach a project, approach the day-to-day and day-out jobs. Expanding our energy delivery services both organically and into new geographic markets by employing our expertise in serving natural gas transmission and distribution customers. So we're looking both, one, where are we currently serving, what opportunities do we have there, but also to adjacent territories, how can we expand our footprint through this organic growth mechanism. Next bullet, expand our footprint to new growth markets through strategic initiatives. So you can look, a couple of years ago, we were looking for opportunities, and we were looking in Ohio, actually. We were able to identify a pipeline gathering company at the time and figure out how to make that project work for us. And that's an example of getting out beyond the current footprint or even the current territory. The fourth bullet. Develop new and unregulated energy services or products that complement our existing businesses and growth strategy. When you think about Eight Flags is a combined heat power plant. This is our first power plant that we've ever constructed in the company or ever operated in the company. And what was happening there is the customer, the host company, if you will, came to us and expressed the desire to get off of the grid, if you will. We have the electric system there. And so our employees in Florida look for ways to solve what they believe was their concerns and identified it was really steam. And so by doing a combined heat and power plant, we're able to solve the customer's concern, save them money, and also generate earnings for us. And so that's just an example of one of the new products or services. Our OPT-90, I think Beth mentioned a moment ago, is also a good example. We remain focused and determined to grow our company with unwavering commitment to service, safety, the environment, and financial disciplines fostered our success throughout our 70-year history, and we're going to continue to do that. Capital expenditures. The key thing for us as a primarily utility, 80-90% of our investments are utility, which requires that we invest capital effectively to grow the company. So when you're looking at slide 13 and that cumulative expenditures and acquisitions of $910 million, you can see the magnitude of the change that's occurred since 2012. In 2017, we're looking at $241 million. Those are very big numbers. Go over to capital expenditures to average capitalization. You can see the target range, if you will, is basically the amount that we need to grow at a, let's just say, a typical utility rate. And you can see the level of capital expenditures that we're getting every year. And the numbers are, you know, in the 20s and 30s, which simply means you should get higher growth. Continue to build for the future. You can see $241 million. We're breaking it down by each of the businesses. You see 50% of that's going to be in natural gas transmission. That's Eastern Shore. 33% in Florida Public Utilities, natural gas operations. So to a large degree, it's going to be the interstate pipeline and then also the Florida natural gas operations. Delmarva Natural Gas is also a big contributor. Propane distribution, less so. And Florida Electric, a little bit less. This performance quadrant is pretty important for us. It's really a key indicator, if you will, of what our growth rate will be. And so you can see we have, I guess, the crosshairs. If you look at the vertical axis, weighted average ROE, and you can see the median running slightly below 10%. If you look at the capital expenditures, total capitalization, how much capital are we deploying as a percentage of our size, current size? The median is somewhere around 13.5%. And you can see where Chesapeake is, right around 12%, slightly lower than 12 on the ROE. At the same time, on the capital expenditures, up over 25. And so what that means, if we can deploy a lot of capital, and then we can earn returns on that capital higher than our peers, then you would expect our growth rate to be higher than our peers. And we use three-year averages for this to take out some of the bumpiness. Current growth initiatives. In 2017, right now, we've got a filing before the FERC to get the authority to construct a pipeline on the Delmarva Peninsula. This pipeline project is almost $100 million to significantly increase the capacity of our system. 61,162 DTs is getting pretty specific, but basically, if you're a residential customer, that'd be the equivalent of 60,000 residential customers. We also have a project in Northwest Florida, expansion project. That project is going to be serving the Pensacola area. This is a new project. We're connecting with Florida Gas Transmission in the Western Panhandle for that project. Again, 33 miles, great opportunity for us. Continued investment in the Florida Gas Reliability Infrastructure System and the completion of the Eastern Shore Natural Gas System Reliability Project. You know, we're constantly looking at service reliability, and periodically you need to do something to improve that. And, you know, on the Eastern Shore case, you may remember the polar vortex a few years ago with the extreme weather that we saw. We saw the need to increase our capacity or increase our ability to serve during those difficult situations. Ocean City, Maryland, we have a bay crossing. We've just completed to run natural gas in the Ocean City, Maryland. That is a pretty significant accomplishment. And we're working on the continuing conversion of sandpaper customers in the Ocean Pines and also Ocean City. A limited filing to be completed. A lot of technical terms here. Basically, what we have is an electric system in Florida, and we're also improving the reliability of that. And we put together a filing to make in Florida to get approval to recover this cost on a timely basis. Expansion of PESCO's natural gas marketing operations in three primary markets. Also, PESCO has assumed the asset manager role for Delmarva natural gas operations. This is a lot of just basically natural gas marketing and helping with the scheduling of gas, et cetera. Turn to slide 17. When you look at gross margin for the period, this is basically we're isolating key large projects, and so we're getting a feel for what these growth from these key large projects are. So you'll see 2016, we've got about $31.3 million of margin being generated by four different areas: natural gas transmission, Florida Grip, A Flag CHP, and a Delaware Division rate case. Then you look at 17, you'll see that $31.3 million, the same things plus new things that we're doing, generates $39.5 million. And then in 18, climbing to $54.42 million. And then 19, $60 million. The 19, you know, sometimes when you get that far out, the numbers might be a little bit lower than what we end up with as we keep working on these projects. Slide 18. This is the Eastern Shore Expansion Project I just mentioned. 23 miles of looping in Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, 17 miles of mainline extension. That's a pretty significant project. Actually, it's the largest project, single project we've ever had since the initial construction of our pipeline. So it is substantial. Expected to be in service the second quarter of 2018. Right now, we've got a filing with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and we're waiting for them to approve the project. It could be, we've experienced delays already. Hopefully, we can get that thing moving quickly. Year-end pipeline capacity, you can see going back to 1998, the increase, and you can see what's happening in 2018 once that project is complete. The Florida Natural Gas Project, you'll see this project really starts just about at the westernmost point in Florida, again, running down to Pensacola, a 33-mile pipeline. We're looking at capital investment for close to $36 million, and $5.1 million is the estimate of margin on the first full year of operation. So, again, we've ordered the pipe. We're going to be initiating that construction here pretty quickly. Regulatory updates. This is stuff. There's always something going on with the regulatory side. You know, we're heavily regulated. Natural gas distribution is regulated by the states. Our interstate pipeline is regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So you go through here that starts with the FERC, the federal stuff. White Oak expansion placed into service in March of 2017. We got approval for that last year and have constructed that. The system reliability project largely complete. That project is, within weeks of being complete. The 2017 system expansion project is that large project we just discussed. So we're looking to get approval in August of 2017, which is not too far away. And then a rate case filing in January 2017. And those rates will go into effect in August 2017. But then it'll be subject to refund. Now, that's a pretty big rate case that picks up the cost associated with the system expansion project and several other things. The Delaware rate case settlement increases base rates effective January 1 of 2017. You also have approximately $2.25 million rate increase recognized in 2016. So we've got things going on in Delaware as well. Maryland, we had a little regulatory issue there with $136,000. We've gotten them to reverse their decision there, or the commissioners reverse their decision there, so we're pleased with that. And then Florida, as we mentioned, they were working on an E-Star, which is similar to the GRIP, and they've withdrawn that filing and are making another filing, restructuring some of that, and so we're pleased with that. And anyway, I think that'll hit it for the regulatory side. Shareholder return, slide 22. If you look at on the left-hand side, it shows our ranking against all NYSE companies for the periods ended March 31 of 17. And you can see their percentile performance. Over 1 year is 39%. When you look at 3 year over a longer term, 3 year 91%, 5 year 90%, 95 and 86%. So what that simply means is that we have outperformed 86% of the companies on the NYSE. Annualized shareholder returns for periods ending March 31. It's kind of an interesting dynamic. We've had about a 20% return, shareholder return in the last several years, and you can see how that has changed. I was going to say, when you look at the peer groups, that they've improved their performance significantly. The medians have changed. Moving on to slide 23. Oh, we're already there. I guess with that, we'll open it up to questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star then the number one on your telephone keypad. We have a question from Insoo Kim of RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Just starting with the Pensacola project announcement, around what time could we expect a decision by the Florida PSC, and then maybe a follow-up to that? You know, it says that you're in negotiations with other third parties for potential further expansion into their territories. Like, could you kind of describe at what stage you guys are with those third parties, and could that maybe be a 2018 event as well?
I'm trying to make sure I heard your question properly. I think on the approval process, I think we're fully approved. There may be a couple little things out there, but, you know, we've got the pipe on order, which typically would mean that we've gotten all of the approvals that we need. There might be a permit or here or there, you know, here or there, but there's that's been we've been working on that project for, I want to say, a year and a half, maybe 2 years. So we're good to go there on that project in terms of getting started. Bring it to completion. I think I'm trying to think. You were asking. I'm thinking about how much, what kind of load we have to support the project.
It was more regarding the comment that you guys are in negotiations with other third parties for, you know, potential further expansion outside of the current project that you guys have on tap, and you know whether, you know, that could be a 2018 event as well.
There is some potential that we would have additional customers on the system in 2018 beyond what we've already focused on. There are several opportunities that we're talking to right now, and we know it's a solid investment with what we've got, and so anything we do will enhance that. But this is most of the project where we stand right now.
Got it. And then maybe speaking with Florida, in the electric distribution system proposal, the SDR proposal that you guys withdrew and will do a limited filing, are you able to give kind of the magnitude of how much less the ask would be versus the original amount of $59.8 million?
I think it's probably premature to say what the expectation is. But I think what we did was we restructured the filing and included pretty much the same thing, but the way we're getting recovery is going to be changing.
Got it. And then given the extreme mild weather that you guys recorded this year, I know last year was also mild, but this year was even milder. How much leverage do you guys have on the O&M side to mitigate some of that impact?
Yeah, so you know, you figure that's a cents a share. If you go back to normal, that's a pretty big number. The O&M side in a single year is pretty tough to do that. But we are looking at things that we can do to bring our numbers up. There may be some things we're looking around to see if we can do some revenue enhancements in addition to cost containment to improve 17. We look at 18, and we know we're in a good position with those big projects that we have coming on board. But 17 is going to be a challenge. And again, we're pretty focused on what we have to do there to try to make the 17 as strong as we can get it.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Well.
Your next question comes from the line of Spencer Joyce of Hilliard Lines. Your line is open.
Beth, Mike, good morning.
Morning.
Congrats on the Florida announcement. You know, we always like to see you guys knock out those big projects. Mike, I kind of want to ask you from a high level. I know a year or two ago we saw you guys kind of wind down Brave Point and then seeing a similar actions with Xeron here this quarter. I'm wondering if there's been any kind of internal, kind of broad strategic review of some of the legacy businesses, or are each of these just kind of one-offs that eventually kind of presented themselves. Just kind of moving forward, I guess, is it possible that we see some other items like this, or, you know, should we just kind of take these as kind of one-offs as they come?
Well, you know, Spencer, we have a strategic planning process we implement every year, and so that kind of creates a, you know, the forum to talk about those kinds of things. And in this particular case, you know, it was similar to the Braidpoint case where when performance wasn't meeting our expectations, then it requires us to take action. And this the Braidpoint had a little bit unique because it was a technology company as opposed to an energy company. But so it was purely, this Xeron situation is purely that performance concern that we had and our future view of what those earnings were going to be. You know, at some point in time, you know, well, I guess really it's every year there's the opportunity to discuss that. And the board is very engaged in the performance of each of these individual companies, and they're aware of that, and we're certainly aware of that. And so, and you know, we don't want to have sustained losses in any of our businesses, and we'll do what we can do to fix it. And if we can't fix it, then we'll have to do something else. And that's kind of where we got with Xeron.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. That's very helpful. That's exactly what I was looking for. Beth, maybe on the sticking with Xeron here for a second, on the profitability side, as we look out over kind of the balance of this year, remind us what Xeron contributed kind of Q2, 3, 4 in 2016 just from either a margin or an EPS type standpoint.
If you look at Xeron, and I can get the more detailed numbers, Spencer, I'm going to talk off the top of my head, but my recollection is that, you know, Xeron's contribution from an operating income standpoint was a little less than a negative $1 million downfall last year. So when you look at the year, it's about $1 million negative that it declined operating income.
Okay, great. So not a huge swing either way. I guess, Beth, sticking with you here for a second as well, obviously a big jump up in the O&M, which totally understandable given what you all are doing on the growth side. But I just want to ask, you know, kind of everything listed slide 7 and then kind of everything listed slide 9, is there anything that we can parse out that is arguably either non-recurring or extraordinary in some sense? I mean, maybe you had to pay overtime where you expect to have kind of regular labor next year. I mean, is there any kind of nuance, you know, just given kind of the magnitude? I just want to, I mean, it seems like there could be a piece or two that we should at least maybe adjust for kind of modeling Q1 18, but any thoughts there?
Sure, and actually, Spencer, that's a great question, and we actually had, I would say, the opposite happen when you look at last year that really had a negative impact this year. And what I mean by that is, for example, with Aspire Energy, you know, we completed that acquisition in 2015. We had a final valuation that was done on that business to where we could record the purchase price and allocate the assets. And as a result of that allocation, we actually had a credit in depreciation expense and Aspire in our 2016 numbers in the first quarter of about $300,000. That this year, you would argue that depreciation is up by $300,000, but really last year was understated because of that valuation. Similarly to that, when you look quarter over quarter, we've got on a healthcare spend, we've got about $700,000 higher of healthcare spend this year than what we had last year. We came out of last year at the end of 2015, looked at our claims, looked at our run rate. We do a lot of different analyses there and had an opportunity to write in some healthcare reserve that unfortunately did not repeat itself this year. That really, though, is something, we don't put a lot of information out there, Spencer, because from one year, from one quarter to the next, it's really a matter of what our health claims experience is. We're self-insured. But there is a huge volatility there that I would point out. And then lastly, as we go through and look at our operations, I would say we have between $500,000 to $750,000 of non-recurring expenses just in terms of things that we're seeing within the business unit. So those, I would say, are the three key things when you look at it year over year that, you know, I would keep in mind.
Okay. So if we think about those three items, you know, obviously the depreciation from 2016, we're at kind of a clear or a clean comparison here in 2017. The final item, the 500 to 750 of items within the business units, is that kind of a special but, you know, could be a recurring theme into next year, or, you know, are some of those a little less likely to repeat next year?
Well, I mean, those costs can include anything if we have, like, special initiatives that we're undertaking in terms of projects, but we're doing so much from a project standpoint. You know, it does get a little bit challenging in terms of trying to say they won't, be incurred again. I think, you know, we're trying to, you know, some of those could be regulatory-related expenses given the fact that we've had multiple rate cases and we're really going to have been through, you know, a lot of our jurisdictions. So those types of things might not repeat itself. So I think there's about $500,000 that we could say we don't see recurring. The other thing I would add, Spencer, you know, is that we also had, as Mike mentioned in the very beginning on slide three, we had transaction costs. And, you know, we've talked internally about, are those costs going to, you know, are you going to have those year over year every year? We don't know. It really depends on the opportunities and which opportunities come to fruition. For now, we haven't included those as an add back or an adjustment just because we are pursuing growth. We've had success in that area. And despite the fact that, you know, we had some costs that we didn't end up moving forward with a transaction, we don't want to say those aren't going to be incurred in the future. So, Mike, I don't know if there's anything else you'd want to add.
Yeah, you might want to also think, Spencer, about the Eastern Shore rate case. Rates will go into effect subject to refund in August. And so, the things that are just trying to think, you're going to get some sort of revenue pickup. We've disclosed the revenue requirement on the reliability project. We haven't really talked about the additional revenue requirements, but that's another factor that could be fairly large in the second half of the year from August through December, and clearly in 2018.
Yes. Thank you. That's very helpful. And again, you know, not trying to be overly critical on the expenses at all. I mean, we understand there are things that have to happen for growth. Absolutely. Just want to make sure we kind of understand everything. Comments very helpful there. That's all I had. Hopefully we'll see you in Florida.
That sounds great. Thank you, Spencer.
Your next question comes from the line of Tanner James of Ladenburg Thalmann. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, the weather impact was pretty significant for you guys for the quarter. Just asking, do you see any opportunities to pursue the implementation of a weather normalized mechanism with any of your regulatory authorities?
Yeah, we've had weather normalization in Maryland currently exists. Delaware has not looked upon that favorably or has asked for discounts on the returns that we thought were more than we wanted to accept. And Florida, we've not filed for that. It's a little bit more difficult in Florida just with the warmer weather, generally speaking, to be able to get that kind of stuff. But that's something, again, I don't think Florida was that big. We do look at that and have conversations and discuss filing stuff, particularly in Delaware, but have elected not to move forward with that in the past. We may feel differently given 2 years in a row of warm weather. And the commission at the state's game may feel differently as well. So that's something to explore.
Understood. Thanks. That's all I had.
Everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your cell phone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Michael Gogler of Johnny Montgomery. Your line is open.
Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Morning, Mike.
Just wondering, where do you see the sizable opportunities, like the Florida natural gas, in terms of larger investments? Is it in Delmarva? Does it stay in Florida or somewhere else? And then as a follow-up, what's the pipeline look like for those larger type projects?
Well, I think it's fair to say that, you know, we've been getting growth, strong growth in both Delmarva and Florida. Florida does have a significantly larger state than Delaware, so you would think that, you know, over time, you know, as long as we're getting these big pipeline projects, you know, Delmarva, that's a fantastic place to be. But you know, you would think that over time, Florida will have significant opportunities down there, and there we are actually, you know, we're executing on those now, and I think so we do like the state of Florida. You would also think that you know, Ohio and Pennsylvania may also present opportunities for us. In terms of the pipeline, you know, we do that process, that strategic planning process, every year. And typically what we see is we've got pretty clear view of the next 3 years, but the fourth and fifth year get a little bit more sketchy just because it's so early in the game. But every year it seems like we go back to the next year and we fill in that fourth year, and we keep doing that. So I think we're pretty confident in the future. We're pretty confident in the next 3 years, and then we get a little bit weak on the back end. We don't disclose where that pipeline is at this publicly, Michael. So I don't have that information for you.
Oh, that's fine. That's all I had. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you, sir.
There are no further questions. Presenters, you may continue.
Well, thanks, everyone. Just want to assure you, our commitment to the communities we serve, our customers, and our investors is steadfast. When you look at our brand values, they include: we do not rest on our laurels. We are results-oriented. We are relentless in our efforts to drive value. We're going to stay on that path. We appreciate your interest in our company, and thank you, and have a great weekend. Bye.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.